According to their studio founder, Larian Studios is done with Baldur's Gate, the entire series. No Baldur's Gate 4, no Baldur's Gate 3 expansions, fully done. What might happen in 10 years? Sven has a change of heart, private equity buys Larian Studios and revives it under someone else's direction, or a spiritual successor made from an ex-studio employee. This is the Time is a Flat Circle intro. Now it's time for your hosts, Rob Roberts, Jamie Summers, and Loki to tell you more about this and the rest of the week's gaming news. Starting right now in the show, where every gamer has a voice.
Hello, my friends out there on the internet. Welcome back to another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. It is Orange Lounge Radio back live once again with episode number 997 of our show for tonight, March 24th, 2024. My name is Rob Roberts. I'm here with you every week, joined by my co-hosts over there in that corner. Say hello to Dark Sakura or Jamie Summers.
Greetings and salivations.
How are you doing this fine Sunday evening?
Sleepier.
Yeah.
I didn't sleep enough. I was playing video games, and it's been kind of a busy time.
You know, I remember when that was the thing, that was the line I used when I was 18, and you're how old now, Miss Sakura?
Your business. And my birthday's not even yet, so.
It's coming up, though. Yet. Coming up, though. The week after we hit 1,000 episodes, believe it or not.
And it will be, hopefully, quite the gathering. I would love for all of my friends to come celebrate with me.
All right. Well, let's
all... It's online. You can all come play with me.
I'll be there, but after work, because unfortunately, I can't use that as an excuse to get out of work. But we'll see. All right. But also,
I don't know, my birthday is a holiday. You should just be like, it's Dark Sakura's birthday, I have the day off, it's a holiday in my religion.
Well,
so there you go.
I don't know if my boss observes that, but we'll see. All right, anyway, say hello as well to Techmaster Loki. Hey Loki.
Hello,
how are you doing?
I'm doing okay.
Yeah, is your birthday gonna be a holiday too?
I mean, it always is.
Or
kind
of memorial.
I just realized, like, after those words left my mouth, I was like, actually, that might be a really bad joke.
No, no, they don't make it a holiday, unfortunately. It's just a memorial. Everyone gets sad on your birthday.
Everyone gets depressed on your birthday. Yeah. So, well, hopefully that can bring you a little bit of joy. In 6 months, you still got some time, though. You still got a little bit of time. So,
yeah.
All right. I see the... game playing behind you tonight. Is it like Wave Race on? No, it can't be Wave Race because it looks like PS2.
Wave kind of Race.
I don't know. What is it?
That's not what that is.
Like Jet Moto or something?
It looks like Wave Race.
It is like Jet Moto. It's Jet Moto 2, actually.
There you go.
Aha!
I never really played those games, to be honest.
Do not step to my knowledge, Bob.
It was great.
I've never played this game in my life.
They need to bring it back because it was a really fun racing series. It's like, yeah, it was like flying jet skis, basically. Mm-hmm. Rocket jet skis.
Yeah, it's jet skis that don't really go on water. They're on land. That doesn't make
any
sense.
They do sometimes. Yeah, they can go on water, but they can also hover on land.
That's like the duck boat in Seattle. Anyway. All right, let's get into some of the gaming news for the week. And yeah, we're going to start off with this is something that's kind of been going around the entire industry this week. Loki, I don't know if you want to do this or you want me to do it, this story at the top.
I'm not very familiar with this, but sure.
No.
I can read it.
Go for it.
The Kotaku editor-in-chief has exited the company due to the parent company's new... guide directive. So Jen Glennon has resigned after 5 months in her role, and apparently this is due to a new editorial direction from GO Media. I wonder what that direction is. Basically, it says, I firmly believe that the decision to invert Kotaku's editorial strategy to deprioritize news in favor of guides is fundamentally misguided given its current infrastructure of the site. This decision is directly contradicted by months of traffic data and shows an astonishing disregard for the livelihoods of the remaining writers and editors who work for Kotaku. Yeah, they'll just get AI to do it. It's fine. I mean,
It's going to be a little hard for AI to write guides for games that just came out because there's nothing for the AI to steal from. I mean, learn from.
Yeah, absolutely. There's stuff that for them to steal from, like all the other guides out there. They'll just rip from them. But it's annoying.
So you mean guides for older games where the content does exist, not guides for newer games.
Or listicles and that kind of nonsense. You know, they do this all the time. How well has this worked for others? I mean, they feel it's a success. The parent company, they're probably looking to drive engagement to these articles, Evergreen or something like that. I don't know. I don't go to Kotaku for guides. That's for sure. So, strike one right there, I guess. I mean, I don't.
I know that a lot of the headlines are about Kotaku this week, but let's be real. This is an industry-wide issue right now. That's just exacerbated by this one particular website a lot of people know. This is an issue that's going on around the industry. And this is weird because, you know, when you look at it for what face value is, do guides get a lot of hits? Yes, they do. Have I used guides? Yeah, of course. Like, you know, I can't think of how many times I've been out there and I've Googled, you know, I'm out there playing Pokemon Go, and I don't know Pokemon as well as a Shane or even like a Mike Deft or somebody in our chat that plays Pokemon all the time. But maybe I'm out there and I just forget. I'm like, okay, what Pokemon is best against Primal Kyogre or Pokemon Go? Right? Like, I just like, and so I can go. And of course, I end up getting a website that has a ton of shit post ads, autoplay video, all this fucking garbage that I just, God, you know what I really want is a browser that just only gives me the text and none of the other stuff. But anyway,
well, here's the thing too, like even with this, like there's not even like, so they do have guides already on their website as like on their homepage. It's one of the first things on there, but like some of these guides are just kind of dumb. Like they're not guides. They're just, to call it a guide would be very disingenuous. Well, it's a listicle is what it is.
Or it's something someone would type into Google.
Really? Like, I'm not going to type in 9 things to know before starting Rise of the Ronin or 18 things to know before starting Dragon's Dogma 2. Or how about Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, best materia for daily magic damage. Like,
what should I do before starting Dragon Dogma 2? That's what they're typing.
And refund your game. Done. There you go. That's what you do.
Okay.
Because it's trash.
Fifth Dream points out the reader view. That's a really good point. It doesn't always work, but you're right. I should remember it for some of those sites that tend to have, you know, just loaded up with all the garbage. And over in our chat, of course, again, I should mention, we do tape live, of course, every Sunday night, 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific at the Voice Geeks Network, twitch.tv/VOGNetwork. Right after the Bobby Blackwolf show. And Bobby's actually in our chat saying, nobody goes to Kotaku for guides, but they go to Google for guides, and Kotaku wants to be on the top of the Google search results. Therein is the problem. Look, I understand a little bit superficially anyway, the superficial layer of guides are always going to get hits because people are going to start games late, or the game is going to have life forever, like a Pokemon game would. You know, people are new to those games every day, or a Zelda, or, you know, a lot of Nintendo properties, people are visiting those games for the first time every day. So those guides are going to have a long life. So at a superficial level, I understand. But it's also one of those things where if the entire industry gets into guide writing, they're all going to cannibalize each other.
They already are. They're already doing this. Like, for example, like with this whole, we want to be at the top of the Google search results. I did What to Know, Dragon's Dogma 2. And the first thing I get is I get multiple posts on Dragon's Dogma. They've got RPG forums or RPG Watch, several YouTube videos, IGN, more YouTube videos, PC Games N, Kotaku is like way down in there. In GameSpot, they're all doing this. So, like, if they're all of these companies are doing this, you're not unique in this thing. And these guides, if you will, are always those the slideshow articles. You know what I'm talking about, where it's like, it's a list and it's a slideshow that you have to click through the list. And then there's a ton of ads thrown in there. It is the same trash that is literally all over the internet. And a lot of it nowadays is AI generated. So, you know, that if that's what they're looking for and they need editors to do it, they just might as well just put up an AI generated article that's just ripping off of all these other articles that are probably generated by AI as well, or people, or who knows. It's all just going to be soup at the end. You know, no one's going to know what it is. And in the end, like, honestly, I mean, probably YouTube will do it better anyways.
Well, and that's the whole thing I was going to say is that, you know, for as much as we're talking about this particular website, it is the exact same thing over on YouTube. It is the exact same thing over on YouTube. And it right on down to the stuff that tends to get a lot of hits on YouTube are the evergreen guide type questions. And then, of course, you get a video that shows you how to do it after 4 or 5 minutes of all of this setup and background, where they tell you the background of everything. And why are they doing that? They're trying to increase the watch minutes, because that's a stat that goes into advertising, you know, revenue eligibility and all this stuff on YouTube. That's why a question that could be answered in fucking 30 seconds is a 10-minute video on YouTube. And people do this all the time. And it's the exact same thing. Those videos tend to get more hits because that's what people are searching on YouTube and so forth. But what's interesting is that look at what's successful on YouTube in the non-evergreen space. You create a sense of, well, there's kind of two things. Shock content, or, you know, unfortunately, things that are extreme viewpoints, which is a whole other issue. And stuff that creates a sense of brand loyalty, basically. And I am sad to hear that Kotaku and a lot of other websites out there have no interest in kind of creating that sort of brand loyalty anymore through well-written, well-researched, you know, articles and so forth. But I this is such a complicated issue, because as much as I sit here and go, that's a very valuable thing to have, I also completely realize that the social media world we live in has ruined a lot of that. No more is there a website to do an article about this news event that happened when somebody's tweeting about it in 200 characters or less. Or whatever social media you use. Facebook, same thing. Even fucking TikTok and Instagram, all of it. Like, it's...
I have a really tangible example of how just the mindset of the masses has turned when it comes to reading or news or any sort of delivery of information. Mm-hmm. And that's, look at old Apple computer ads.
Okay.
How they were all, they showed you the product. It had, you know, the nice big logo and several paragraphs of information about the thing they were advertising. Mm-hmm. All set in Adobe Garamond Pro. Now look at your ads. Big picture.
Apple
one
ain't
word.
Run by a bitch. That's the new ads. I'm just kidding. But you could, like, it might
but
as well
you,
be
you
on
know
social
what I
media.
Mean.
No, I do.
It's a very tangible, you know, and this is just in a matter of maybe 15 years. Mm-hmm. You know, look at your ads, you know, you would get so much information, you know, like call this number, do this thing, blah, blah, blah. And now it's just like face QR code. You know,
I really did like how informative those iPod commercials were with the people dancing in the cords for their headphones.
I'm talking about print ads.
Who looks at print ads?
And that's a whole other problem, right?
Web apps technically count as a print ad. Anything, it's roughly the same equivalent, just in digital form. It is a solitary, stationary thing, but it goes back into, you know, there was so much text and so much information to look at, and now it's, here's your big ad. It has to catch your attention within a second. It has to get the point across. And I honestly think, and we went over some of this when I was in graphic design school, that there is a change in psychology where the mind today is processing information at a so much faster speed because we've been acclimatized to it. Mm-hmm. And that's now what media is catering to, is that fast, bite-sized, digestible piece of information. You know, how much information can we convey you know, without you having to read several paragraphs worth of stuff. And on top of that, too, we're having people, you know, forgetting entire methods of writing. The same thing is happening in Japan with writing kanji. People were just letting their text autofill. We're doing a lot of the same here. But going back to it, you know, people are typing and they're forgetting skills in writing. People are losing ability to think critically if the information is presented to them in a quick and easy and makes sense format. They don't fact check. They don't know if there's anything to substantiate it, which is, I'd say, 90% of Twitter these days. But a lot of it, Bobby is correct that it wasn't just Apple, but I'm saying in general, those are the ones you can probably find the easiest examples of, or that might stick out in the memory a little bit more for people. But we are given the information that people want us to think at the right time. And that's, I think, where the danger lies. I think that, I mean, I'm going to sound like, you know, the old guy on the, you know, lawn shaking his cane to get off the lawn and yelling at clouds. But
what did Cloud
Evil
do to you?
Said it. People would rather follow the opinions of those they think are popular than form their own, because we don't want to think. Well, we are now conditioned not to think,
and
we're conditioned to take the information at a glance, and if it's inconvenient, boo hoo.
And algorithms are just playing into all of that, what you just said, which in my opinion, you know, and I've said this for a while, is what makes Twitter so damn dangerous. And I would love nothing more than to see that site go down tomorrow permanently. But, you know, I realize some people are just going to say, oh, you're just a hater, Rob, or whatever. It's just, I don't think,
no, it's true.
I don't think a lot of that, like, nothing would make me happier than for Twitter to be gone tomorrow. Nothing would make me happier. And honestly, I think some of these sorts of trends about, you know, because we're sitting here talking about this, and really, like, this is one of the few times where I'm just sitting here going, yeah, it sucks. I don't know what we can do about it. This was going to be a colossal shift in how we seek out information and how we parse information for this situation to change. I just don't see how this changes. And this sucks, because I feel like, is it the right call for Kotaku to make money? Maybe. I don't know. I'm not in finance, but I can see superficially that, yeah, it probably leans into them getting more hits and influencing Google search results. Is it ethically the right thing to do for them to have hired these writers that wanted to come in and work for a gaming website that everybody knew about? And is it ethically the right thing? Absolutely not. And that sucks. And props to the editor-in-chief for doing what they
did. Who cares about ethics when there's money?
Bingo. Bingo.
Right. But I'm also starting going to see, this is a semi-prediction. Mm-hmm. It may or may not happen. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to start seeing a new trend in labor laws that are going to try to help preserve jobs for the human element. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That, you know, like so and such percent of the workforce must be human and not AI, and must be able to fill these functions, and then work hours, etc. They're already talking about lowering us to a 32-hour-a-week thing, which honestly I don't think would be bad as long as our income stays the same. But it's just, there's another thing too, and this is a little bit of a me thing, is that I've been very interested in going back and finishing my sociology degree and interspacing it with trends on the internet and communities, and see how we look at our communities with the same sort of psychological attachment. That might not be the best word, of going to hang out with your friends in real life. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, I'm, you know, like if I say, oh, I'm going to go hang out with my friend's stream, I say it like I'm going to go hang out with my friend, you know? It's a change in overall psychology with how we're wired today. And Rob, Loki, you know, Bobby, you know, people who are, I would say, like this late Gen X or early what was that? Gen Y, millennial, whatever.
Zillennial.
The Zennial crowd.
Yeah.
I'll say the Zennial crowd. I hate it, but I'm using it. We all grew up when the first computers were in their infancy. We're a very unique generation with all of this because we have gone from the days where we saw things explained and things spelled out and we had to research and we had to use a freaking encyclopedia and we had to know how to think critically. We played outside and we came in and played our Nintendos. You know, we grew up with all of this as it grew up. And I think that this puts us in a unique position to understand where that transition was happening and to have seen it change and participated in it. Make sense?
Yeah.
And so I think that more than anything, I think that that puts us in exactly the unique position as well as being able to suggest not necessarily how to combat it, but how to, what's the word I'm thinking of? Lessen the blow. I can't make my words happen right now. I'm having a moment.
Well, and
but
not,
to
not to take this,
buffer.
Not to take this too far to a weird place, but to your point, you know, when you talk about how can change actually happen, we are also probably the most underrepresented generation racially when you talk about politics, because there's a certain other generation that won't get out of politics.
But the other thing, too, is that we actually have also a very special place in the land of politics because we were new voters right around the era of Rock the Vote. Mm-hmm, remember?
Voter P. Diddy will kill you. That was a little later, but still, you know.
Or, you know, that pretty much came up with, I'd say, the Clinton election Bill Clinton.
But the MTV voting campaign, absolutely, absolutely.
But we had a relatively younger candidate who played sax on TV. I was like, I'm voting for him. He plays sax. I play sax. Mm-hmm. No, I'm kidding. But you know, we had that point where they were realizing much more the value of the younger voter in that by shaping what we did now, we would be setting a precedence for the future. And I don't really remember seeing the kind of marketing made to younger voters as what I've seen since my late teens and up.
Anyway,
you know?
Yes. I want to.
But that's also playing into it is that now we have the age behind us. Mm-hmm. We can all run for president if we wanted to. Most of us. But this is my point. We have the experience behind us and we're still relatively young enough, I think, that we haven't quite lost touch with how the world works. I mean, some of us have tried to stay in the loop. I'll put it that way. There are people who are way out of the loop. But my point remains, we had that perspective that no other generation has.
Questbuster in chat says social media has made the immediacy of everything intoxicating. Absolutely. And that's, you know, for better or for worse, mostly worse. I wanted to go back
to a massive echo chamber.
I wanted to go back to some other comments that was brought up before that was kind of piggybacking on what Dark Soccer had brought up with the computer ads. Questbuster in chat said, adding to Dark Soccer's point, a lot of old gaming print ads I've seen from the 80s were text walls with art and no screenshots, but maybe showing off the game box for a bit of spice. Yeah, absolutely. And Bobby brings up like an example, a recent example where you can kind of see this now. Bobby says that's the interesting thing about the Gold Master series stuff, which we've talked about before on this show. You know, they have the Gold Master Digital Eclipse been doing the Gold Master Karateka, and they just released the Jeff Minter one. I haven't played that yet. I know Bobby talked about it on his show a little bit, but in the Gold Master series, they show a lot of the ads of the games from back then, and it's very descriptive. And part of what I've really enjoyed, at least about the Karateka, and I imagine the Jeff Minter one's very similar, is that it's really an interesting peek behind the curtain of really how the games went from start to finish at that point. It's very fascinating to look at that stuff. And I really, for those of you that are ever going to ask the question, how did we get here in gaming? If you're ever going to ask yourself that question, I think this is a really fun trip to take. And I think Digital Eclipse has done a really good job so far with this series, for sure. So, and Atari 50 is kind of Gold Master Zero, to be honest. It's, you know, that was the first sort of proof of concept of that whole thing. So, anyway, Yeah, it's you know, a lot of people kind of reminiscing about you have to wait. Breakman saying you used to have to wait until 6 or 11 to find out what was happening in the world, or the next day in the paper. That is a very perceptive sort of look at this versus what happens today, where now it's like immediately on your phone and it's everywhere. You know, I remember, and I think, you know, not to get too weird, but since you brought up the Zennial generation, I would say probably the news media event that unites us all would have been the Challenger explosion when the space shuttle, you know, and because why is that? Because we were all in grade school when it happened. Our generation was in grade school when it happened. So everybody has a sense of where were you when that whole thing happened? And some, depending on what coast you're at, so the East Coasters, I think a lot of them saw it live. And that was a very shocking thing. Now for us on the West Coast, that was like a 6 a.m., 6:30 a.m. So not everybody saw it. So I remember being told.
Well, I was in Alabama.
Yeah. Did you see it
live? We were watching the launch live.
Wow. See.
I watched that shit live.
Yeah.
And it was funny. You know how a couple of Fridays ago I had a Fuck It Friday with my ballet friends? Mm-hmm. Some of them are younger, of course, and had only heard of it, not actually seen it. So, like, do you want to see what we saw? Because my other friend had lived in Central Time as well. So we put it up and watched, and they both looked at us and said, how are you not fucked up growing up with that? I'm like, little do you know.
Well, yeah. And then, like, every generation also kind of had, I would say the generation after us has 9/11 as an example of, you know, that similar sort of thing. But again, that was really playing out live for a lot of people. Right. So anyway, my point is when that all happened, being on the West Coast,
I had friends who were in the damn building.
I didn't find out about the Challenger until my second grade teacher showed up late, and we were all wondering where the teacher was, and she showed up late and she had to tell the class what happened and why she was late. And so it was,
so you didn't watch it.
No, because it was like 6:30 for us. It was too early. It was before school.
Oh.
Yeah. So.
Oh, hell. Because, yeah, it was still like morning in class. We had been there for a couple of hours and we were all excited. We drew pictures of shuttles and all of this stuff. And we were all, we put our desks in like a semicircle around the class TV that they bring out on that big black stand.
Yeah, on the wheels. Yep.
And then. And we were all like, and for me, like when I was that age, I kind of wanted to be an astronaut. I was like, this is a big deal for me. I want this to happen. Mm-hmm. And then just watching it explode into our, you know, young 10-year-old minds, you know, we had no concept of how dangerous a mission like that could be until we saw it ourselves.
And
that didn't look like any explosion you see on TV or in the movies.
I'm really getting off track, but since we're down this memory, no, it's fine. But since we're down this memory lane, I will say when 9/11 happened, the West Coast thing also kind of affected that, because I remember, because, you know, the first plane would have hit the tower around, again, six, kind of early. I wasn't up for work yet.
I was awake.
And I distinctly remember, yeah, Bobby says this is evergreen content, kind of the whole where were you moment. I distinctly remember because I'm going to choose my words very carefully, but I lived with someone at the time that we thought we were friends and we weren't. Like, I'm just going to leave it at that, right? And you remember this person, Dark Sakura, if you think back when I lived in that house.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... And him and I had been in a pretty stupid fight the night before or something like that. And I think I was out. Do you remember back when I dated Richard? I think Richard and I had gone on our first date the night before, I think was that. So I remember getting up that morning and I'm getting ready to go to work. And I walk out and my crazy ex-roommate was like, well, a plane just hit the World Trade Center and there's a bunch of planes still up in the sky and we don't know where they're headed and they're going to probably crash into other things. Have a great day at work. Bye.
Jeez.
And I was like, you are
that
such...
That sounds like him though.
And yeah, and I was like in my head, I'm like,
you are
such a bitch, like in my head. And I just got in the car and went to... And it didn't, like, nothing hit me. All I could think about is like, what a fucking bitch this guy was, basically, and how I hated this whole situation I was in. And ended up driving to work. And at the time, I was listening to Howard Stern because he was brand new to Sacramento. We had never had him out here before until like maybe a few months before. Finally, and I wanted to see what
his New York based.
I wanted to see what his show was all about. I was listening more, so that's where my car was tuned to. So I was driving to work, and obviously his show was not normal that day, right? It was very like, you know, and it was when I was hearing this, I was like, oh my God, like the reality of the situation hit me. And I remember getting to work and I just like sat in the parking lot and I didn't even want to go in the building, but I did eventually. And everybody was just huddled around somebody's little black and white TV that they would watch soap operas on while they did their work.
So for me,
yeah,
I went to get up to check the weather. And it was on the Weather Channel. And so, and now I think I like have like my little Nokia or my, you remember my Sony Ericsson phone? So I'm like, I pull out my phone the first thing and I call grandmom. I'm like, grandmom, turn on the TV. Well, what channel? I was like, it doesn't matter. Pick one. And it's a news channel. And then she looks at it and says, well, Jamie, what am I looking at? And I told her, and we were on the phone together right when the second one hit. And I went to work. This is when I was working for the money store. Well, after it was the money store, but, you know, subprime lending. We hardly got a call all day. And I actually got a call from a coworker, because this is at the time that First Union had merged. And they're like, I'm calling because I need to see if like if my daughter had called here, because we had people who were calling us to check on their family who were employees for, you know, like we can't route that information. But I talked to one person who had gotten out of the building after the second one hit. I had a friend who had gone to her lunch break before the first one and did not go back clearly. And another one who was actually under rubble and was saved because of the way like something fell on her, propped up enough of the rubble to keep her from getting crushed.
My God.
And like her phone ringer was alerting people to where she was.
Anyway, I we got way on
didn't
a tangent.
Didn't mean to go like that.
No, but it is a very...
These are things that shape our attitude.
Yes, exactly that. So for those of you that are like, what the fuck does this have to do with the original point? We're talking about the way how we have consumed news now has completely changed. Because think about how something like that now plays out on Twitter. It's such a different sort of thing. And, you know, for big gaming alerts and things like that, I don't know. It's just... It's very interesting how a lot of that has changed, you know, but I'm also reading chat, and SJ 100 Matt makes a very interesting point that's a little bit humbling, saying that for topical purposes, I found out about Bin Laden was found and killed while listening to OLR. And you might remember that's the interesting thing about doing the show live is that that happened while we were in the middle of the show. And I remember having to say, because we were at your house at the time, I think, doing this live, Darksoccer. And I remember at the time having to say, like, I know this is weird, but there's, like, a big thing going on. We're just going to, like, talk about it for a second and, you know, kind of got into that. So it's very, very interesting. That's very humbling, thinking about that that was a very big news story of a different time. And how maybe we are entwined with that for some people is very, very humbling.
And I guarantee you today... If something like that happened, if we had another big, you know, terrorist, well, actually, look at the terrorist attack on Israel, how that played out, how there were live tweets coming from people who were, oh, my God, they're outside of my house, or, you know, text messages, things like that. That is how our news is being reported. That's how big attacks like this is being reported.
Well, and it's also a lot of it is here it is and here's how you should feel about it.
Exactly. But there's a lot of recycling of, I'm just going to say it like this, other people's content.
Oh, sure.
It's like having a free interview with an eyewitness, but they're taking it and just, their articles are predominantly taken up by other people's tweets and then speculation on it. And I don't think that that's like the eyewitness news kind of thing. But that's how they're doing a lot of stories today.
This is Pop Crave's entire thing. is just finding the hit tweet and putting their own spin on it and retweeting it. And then all the people that follow that site, it's fascinating. Anyway.
But that goes back to people not doing their own research again and putting out speculation that people are taking as fact.
All right. It is a video game show, believe it or not, but it's also a video game community. So let's talk a little bit about, and again, I'm sorry to leave this lead story as, wow, this sucks. I don't know what else we can do about this. Again, this doesn't change unless there is a fundamental way in how we consume a fundamental change in the way we consume information. That's not happening tomorrow.
No, just wait until we have the chips that download how we think into our head.
Well, hold on, because we have a story coming up on that later. But for now, let's talk about our gaming weeks and the types of video games that we have been playing this week. So Dark Soccer, what games have you been playing this week?
I have been playing a good bit of Avatar again. I'm sort of putting off ending the game. Although I found out you can keep playing when the game is done, so I might do that, you know, just like, I'm going to be a Navi for the rest of ever. I've been playing Dead by Daylight. I'm going to be playing, of course, more today because I want to get through the Blood Moon thing. Mm. And I haven't touched Killer at all during it. What else? Oh, yeah, I've been playing the Saturn Castlevania Symphony of the Night or Nocturne in the Moonlight. You know, right now I'm in that exploring and locating shit phase, although I think I got like four familiars and other forms. Like I got the mist form, the bat form, and the wolf form. And then I got like the other power-ups for those. But I still need to get the spike breaker armor so I can go get the walk armor. The walk armor, if no one knows, is the best armor to have in that game when you have done over 100% map completion. Because the more of the map that you fill up, the stronger your armor gets. So I'm trying to get back down to the catacombs so I can fight some werewolves and get a Yatsutsuna, which to me is the best weapon in the game, short of the jeweled fist. And yes, the Saturn version is better, but what's awesome about the one that I'm playing is that it has the English dialogue from the PSP version or the PlayStation one that came out.
I remember that being a story on the show several weeks ago that patch was. Yeah.
And I had it downloaded then. I just hadn't started it, I think, or maybe I had just started it. But it's still got a lot of the Japanese voices left in there. So, which is funny because like you get like dialogue in one language and then you get, you know, you hear it in, you know, the background stuff in Japanese, but they also bumped it up to where it takes full advantage of the Saturn's capability, where the one that we got originally was very rushed. I paid $20 for it when it came out, you know, and now it's going for megabucks, but it wasn't super polished and it didn't use a lot of the better transparency effects and the better 2D animation that the Saturn was capable of. So this is very well done. This is what the game should have been. And then I played something else, but I don't remember. So, oh yeah. We took out Weird Al because Dan hosted League. And so we put in Final Resistance on the P3. Mm-hmm. So we played some of that.
All right. We'll go over to Loki. How was your gaming week?
I didn't play much other than, you know, Minecraft. So I've been working on a big Redstone project that's now done. I'm actually editing the video for it. So it's a big super smelter. And it's awesome because it's very fast and ridiculously large. So that'll be coming very soon. Hopefully, maybe even tomorrow. And then I'm taking some time off this week to work on the first theme park ride because it's taking a lot of time to build all that and conceptualize it and get everything working. So getting closer there each day. But yeah, mostly this week it's been movies. So I saw the new Ghostbusters movie yesterday, and then on Thursday I saw Rad, which is an old BMX BMX movie from 1986.
Oh, hell, I love that fucking movie.
Yep, they had it in theaters for Rad Day. It was awesome. My kids did not want to stay for the Q&A afterwards, and so I was a little bit bummed there because they had, I guess, Ed Helms from, like, The Office, the comedian. He was hosting the Q&A with, I don't know who it was supposed to be, because it was all through that, like, Fathom Events thing. But apparently he rides BMX. Who knew? Like, that's the thing he does, though, and I guess he's a fan of the movie, so it would have been interesting. But yeah, I've been trying to get him to see that movie forever now, and so now we have to watch all of the different extreme sports like movies. So like, there's
Show and Pee-wee's Big Adventure. There's BMX in that.
Yeah, there is. That's true. Like Thrasher was just one. I think it's Thrasher or Thrash, which I was just reminded of. I've never seen it, but like it was in another video I was watching. But like you know, Gleaming the Cube. You know, a little bit later, Airborne, which is, you know, the like rollerblade type movie to go along with all this type of
stuff.
Do
you remember Solar Babies?
No.
They were like stuck in this area, but they played like some weird version of lacrosse. God, there was another one too that I was thinking of.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Prayer of the Roller Boys was another one.
Yes. Prayer of the Roller Boys. That's a good one. And I mean, even I guess, oh God, what is the other one?
Robot Jocks.
I mean, that's not really extreme sports. That's just robots.
No, but it's fun. It's so fun. Bad, and I love fun. It.
How was the new Ghostbusters movie? Just out of curiosity.
I liked it. I don't know. I mean, I get a lot of people have like complaints about it. It was fine. I don't know. It was like, certainly it's not going to be as good as the last one, because the last one was essentially remaking the first movie. And then there's just like, how much nostalgia can we inject into your veins? So this one's a little bit more normal, but there's like, I don't know, like the old Ghostbusters cast. Like some of like, okay, Bill Murray phoning it in. I mean, he's in it for like a couple minutes. Really didn't even need to be in the movie. Like, there's no point for it. It was okay. And then there's also like, I mean, I'm just rolling my eyes because it's ridiculous. Like, who cares? There's a scene with this ghost girl and the young Spengler, and there's like some chemistry there. You don't know if it's friendship of, oh no, maybe it's lesbian chemistry. Who gives a shit? Like, it's just a movie. Like, but people are making a big deal about dumb shit like that. Like, who cares? It was okay.
Well, I wasn't interested in the movie.
I mean, there was a reason that they took out the ghost sex scene with
Dan Aykroyd.
Sorry, I wasn't interested in this movie until you told me I'm missing out on lesbian ghosts. Like, well, hell yeah, like, that should be the tagline.
It's not even
are they calling it Frozen Empire? They should have called it Ghostbusters Lesbian Ghosts. I would be into that.
So here's the thing: like, even with all that, like, it's the best description I've heard of it is that they said it feels like someone took an episode of the real Ghostbusters and gave them the budget to make a full movie based off of one episode of that show. And that's kind of, yeah, it kind of feels like that a little bit. It's like kind of the ghost of the week, you know. They explain it, it's not really tied into the old movies or anything. It's just a ghost that's trying to raise an army of the dead, as they do, you know. So
still want to see it.
I thought it was fine, it was good. Like, I don't really have high expectations for it. It met those expectations. I wasn't bored. My kids said that it was dragging towards the end, but I think it was fine.
All right.
Tiara was telling me this morning that they thought it started off really strong and kind of fizzled at the end.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people have been saying. I guess it didn't really feel like the pacing was slow to me. There's a lot of like, I don't know, there's a lot of people that are like characters from the first movie that just like, oh, hey, look, I'm in New York now, too. Oh, hey, look, I'm in New York now, too. Like, it's like, where are all these people coming from? Why are they here for no reason?
We are all in New York right now.
Exactly. It's like, oh, hey, you podcast, you know, the character from the last movie from Oklahoma City. Oh, now you're helping Ray. film his like podcast. Like, why? How, where are you living? Yeah, then, you're a child.
Out of curiosity, did the Lady Ghostbusters from the 2016 movie, did they have any cameos whatsoever?
No. That's literally forgotten. Yeah.
All right. Anyway,
I actually have
back to games.
A question.
Quick tangent. Yeah. Then back to games.
Okay. What do you think about the trailer for Beetlejuice?
I want to see it. I'm excited about Beetlejuice.
Yeah. I love that Lydia is still hyper goth.
I'm just so happy Catherine O'Hara is still in
and
it.
They got, yes, I was about and to say they got the lady, the legend.
Yeah, well, and it's very obvious who dies at the beginning because only one of the original cast of Beetlejuice is in jail for very, very, very bad crimes. So, so anyway, or maybe on parole, but on a registry at this point. So they will not be making any more movies, rightfully so. All right, anyway.
Although the first movie still has one of my favorite lines. Mm-hmm. If you don't let me gut out this house and make it my own, I will go insane and I will take you with me.
All right. Back to games. Loki, any other games?
No, that was it.
All right. My game of week. So I have, of course, the good old favorites like Final Fantasy 14, still working on that. Still playing. I even signed into Dead by Daylight this week, which I haven't played in months. I played a match. I passed away because I didn't have very good team. No, I escaped one of them. I played a couple matches because I escaped one of them because I got called selfish because I left somebody on the hook. But I'm like, you're on, like, the killer's camping you, and if I go rescue you, they're just going to camp me. So, later. So, and I don't feel bad about it. That's why I play anonymously. And honestly, if I could just disable post-game chat, I would, which I think I probably can. I should just do that.
Console.
Yeah, I know, play on console, right? Otherwise, the event is cute. I wanted to cash in my million blood points and see what's changed over the last few months. Cause I don't have Alan Wake. I don't have the new, I don't have Chucky, any of that stuff. So there's a lot of stuff I guess I've missed out on recently. So,
you need to play The Unknown.
Yeah, I guess I'll check it out at some point. I did not.
The Unknown.
I didn't face The Unknown
as a
killer.
Super fun killer we've had in the game.
Oh, really?
It's been a while.
I didn't go against them any of the matches I played. I think I had like a, I don't even remember what it was. But yeah, just, I had other stuff.
It takes the good parts of, well, I mean, I love Sadako as well, but it takes kind of the good parts of Sadako and Dredge. And then the good parts that should have been with the Singularity and marries them into an utter creep fest.
Both games I played were against the Singularity for some reason. I don't know. I guess
Singularity's been having an uptick.
Yeah. Anyway. But other stuff. So how about some non-normal stuff? Because there's a couple games I played that were a little outside the norm for me. One of them was World of Warcraft, which I know I've played before, but they have a limited time mode that just launched in the game earlier this week called Plunderstorm. So they added this whole thing that's very pirate themed into World of Warcraft. It is not part of the main game. So when you're on the character selection screen, you actually click a different logo to go over to Plunderstorm, and you have your basically like season character or whatever, because this is only supposed to be a 6-week event. And it essentially is World of Warcraft meets Fortnite. It is very intentionally them building a Fortnite type of thing into World of Warcraft, except instead of guns and shooting, it is using randomly acquired spells, which is a very interesting sort of thing. So it puts a roguelike twist onto it, which I guess if you think about a lot of stuff in Fortnite is random as well. But yeah, so you kill mobs and NPCs, and sometimes they drop spells, and you have to choose what spells to take out, and then you also can grab plunder, gold, and then occasionally you run into other players, and you have to engage in combat, and hopefully your spell kit is good enough, and you're leveled. It was kind of difficult in the beginning, because it doesn't teach you a lot of what's going on. Yeah, I did stream it, and most of my games were horrible. I was legit last place, one of my games, 60th place, because I landed the exact same place someone else did, and they took me out right away. As much as I tried to fight it. But yeah, as 200 Matt does point out, I got top 5 one game. I was like 4th place one game, mostly because I ran around like a little bitch and just was like on the outskirts. I was trying to like find more NPCs to kill, but it kept me alive for a very long time. But one game I was on a roll. I killed 3 other people before I died. Just when I was starting to think like, am I ever going to be able to kill somebody in this game? I got like 3 people in one match. I was like, okay. Otherwise, it was fine. I anticipated I would do a 3-hour stream of Plunderstorm because I usually try to do a stream around 3 hours. I was done with it after an hour and a half. I was like, all right, bored now. Like, let's move on. So I'm not sure what kind of lasting power that has. So it's probably best as a sideshow, but I think it's cute that they're using the Warcraft engine to kind of do some of these things. Bobby Blackwolf in chat says, maybe you need a guide of 10 things you should know before starting World of Warcraft Fortnite mode. I'll tell you what, go look up Plunderstorm on Kotaku. I guarantee that guide exists. Exactly what you just said. Because I think I saw it on there as I was browsing the main page when all this other stuff came up. So, yeah, there's a lot of sites that are doing that right now. Because that's actually useful information, because the game doesn't tell you much, to be honest. You kind of have to get in there and figure it out. Like, there's very minimal background information in the little town square area. But people use their little barrel right away to knock everybody away. And it's very hard to talk to people in the town. But anyway, that was a little diversion. The other game I played that for me was brand new, and maybe you will be surprised to hear that I played this game, is I played Foam Stars. This game has been in the news a lot because there is a minimal amount of AI that they have used in the game. And so it's gotten a lot of shit for that. And I will say the AI is limited to very, very, very... It's when you're in the sound player, it's the album arts are very AI generated. Here's the thing. They look AI, like they look out of place. I don't know what the fuck they were thinking with that whole thing. That was a really bad decision to do that. Here's the thing about Foam Stars. And why did I play this game? Because Shane and I made an agreement, because he's been really into Foam Stars and enjoying it. And he said, if you play Foam Stars on stream, I'll play a game that you want on stream later. And he assumed I would pick Diablo, but I was like, no, Diablo's kind of... like, I don't think it's a good right now to like level with somebody. So coming soon, because I think we're going to do it after the current event, I'm going to make Shane play Dead by Daylight with me. He's never played before. So that'll be fun. So stay tuned for that. So the agreement was I'll play Foam Stars. He plays Dead by Daylight. So I play Foam Stars. Here's the thing. The game actually isn't bad. Like, a lot of people compare it to Splatoon. And yeah, I get the Splatoon comparisons, but... believe it or not, the whole like foam mechanic where you're actually riding on the foam and you don't really like go underneath it. You're more like on this board where you can kind of like make walls and all this stuff. Like, it does kind of end up being a very different sort of mechanic. And you can the heroes that you play are more like Overwatch. In Splatoon, everything is very well. You can do this weapon or that weapon and have this ultimate or that ultimate. And the way Foam Stars is put together is a little more of an Overwatch sort of feeling. But that stuff aside, when we would actually get into a match, we didn't get into everything we queued up for because nobody's fucking playing this game anymore. Nobody, like, people were playing this game for people aren't playing this fucking game, and it's unfortunate because the game isn't bad. But this game is one of the most grossly mismanaged games I think I've seen in a very long time. And just yet another shining example of how the people at the top of the industry don't know what the fuck they're doing. And this AI thing is an excellent example of that. SGO100 Matt says, creating real album art is 2 weeks worth of work. The AI got it done in 2 hours. That was a bad fucking call. Somebody should have gone outside and take photographs and used crappy Photoshop filters and put cheap text on them. I could have got them done in 2 hours and have them look just as compelling. Like, that was a bad call. Or here's another idea. Don't have you. Who says you need to have fucking album art on your sound test mode? Just don't have it, because it has nothing to do with the rest of the game. And then you don't get all this negative press. This is a bad idea. But even putting that aside, consider the fact that Foam Stars, a Square Enix product, launched the same day on PlayStation Plus as Helldivers 2. So PlayStation, you know, obviously put a lot into that, and that game's big. But then also the Final Fantasy VII Rebirth demo launched the same day as Foam Stars, also a Square Enix product. So this game was really set up to fail on multiple perspectives. And now it's like, nothing is supporting this game. This game is going to go ass up soon because it's no longer free on PlayStation Plus. And I'm sorry, don't pay paying $30 for this game when there's all these like battle pass, microtransaction, all the shit you'd expect to see. Don't do it. People aren't going to do it. This game has been set up to fail by gross mismanagement. And there's no other way around it, because otherwise the game wasn't bad. I had a lot of fun playing with Shane and playing on stream. And I'm kind of surprised that I'm saying that, because I remember when I played the demo, I didn't really care for it. But playing the game with Shane gave me a perspective on the game that not even any fucking guide in the world could do. And that is, somebody could just explain to me what to do and what I was seeing meant and what the strategy was in the current moment. Somebody was able to like kind of walk me through that. And that made the game like 100 times more fun, playing with somebody who kind of knows what they're talking about. So anyway, the Breakman says, so this is another case of publisher interference is the biggest problem. Sort of. SS2100 Matt, is responding to a comment that Bobby Blackwolf made saying, what is the TTP or time to penis and foam stars? When Rob starts playing is the answer. Just an interesting aside on this whole thing. And this is not something I usually care about. I want to stress. But this was one of those things where I went, that's really fucking interesting. And I don't get it. I had more viewers than I've ever had for a stream playing Foam Stars.
Interesting.
I had an average of high 30s playing Foam average. I don't, and again, I don't usually care about that shit. It's just one of those things I was like, what? Why? Huh? And I guess I was like the only person playing it on Twitch, and maybe that's part of the reason about it. Yeah, Mike Dev says you dominated in the Foam Stars category because literally nobody else was playing it. So it was just interesting. And yeah, SGO100 Matt says I got raided a couple times, which yeah, probably helped, but it's just, I retained the raids. That doesn't usually happen. So it's, yeah, it was just a very sort of thing. Anyway. All right. That's it for my gaming week. Let's move on and talk about some gaming news and what else is going on in the gaming world. Loki, we'll start. Oh, but I will just mention really quick, because like usually here's when we talk about like housekeeping and like what's going on in show news. FYI, tonight is episode 997. That means episode 1000, which really was a thing that we could only really dream and joke about literally at one point when this show hits 1000 episodes. I distinctly remember that in an old episode. We joked, oh yeah, we'll never get to 1000 episodes, but it would happen in the year like 2023 or 2024 or whatever. So April 14th is going to end up being our 1000th episode of Orange Lounge Radio. We are the only weekly gaming podcast to get to 1000 episodes. And that's pretty wild to think about. So, and I just want to say, you know, I don't expect that this is going to get a lot of traction because, you know, we have, of course, our podcast listeners that we love. We have maybe mid-20s viewing us on Twitch right now. So we're not like, you know, top tier. It's fine. It's okay. We've made peace with that. We have awesome people with us every week that keep us going. But it's just one of those things where it's like, it's really just kind of neat to kind of go like, holy shit, we did this thing that literally was only a dream. And we're going to hit that landmark on April 14th. It's wild and it's awesome. So thank you all who have been here for the ride. It's very deeply appreciated. And yeah, Bobby Blackwell says, I mean, we're in the top 1% of Twitch with our mid 20 viewers. Yeah, now look, and I'm very thankful for every viewer that we have. Absolutely. My point is that it's not like the guide writing gaming media or the mainstream is going to give a shit. We're not a, let's say, Asmongold or something where that guy fucking farts and they write a news article about it on various websites that AI helps them generate. Like, or, you know, a lot of other people, Pokimane makes a decision about, you know, what she's doing. And, you know, again, every website starts to roll. We're not that. And that's okay. Again, there's actually a lot of good things that come with not having a constant eye on you all the time. So it's just, but I don't expect that there's going to be a lot of fanfare, and that's okay. All right. Yeah, SG100 Matt says, thank you for taking us along on your dream journey. Well, there wouldn't be a journey if you all weren't here. So very much appreciate that. All right. Now we can actually get into some gaming news. Sorry, Loki. Go ahead.
That's all right. So Steam family sharing is getting very interesting. So now they're going to be replacing Steam families. Essentially, Steam families is going to replace family sharing. Which you may remember was a way to allow other people to basically use the games in your library. Now, it says it's going to support up to 6 family members total, and anybody in the families will be able to share the games with both offline availability and, they said, streamlined license availability is at long last. What I think is really cool about it, though, is that basically, like, I could be playing a game on Steam, and if my kids want to play one of the other 900 probably games that I have, they can do that without any sort of interruption to what I'm doing. Also, they said that apparently the game license owner can continue playing other games while one license is being shared with the family members. Users accessing shared games can now play them offline as well. And I think there was something they're saying, retaining all key features, including separate achievements, save games, and other player-generated content. So, yes, my kids are very excited about this because I have a lot of games that they would like to play. And so I may actually end up having to use this.
Are they able to prevent people from sharing this across a distance?
I don't think so. It just says you designate 6 family members. So, I consider my friends family. So it's
some of us do. Yeah.
So we could do that. But yeah.
E3VL says technically anyone can be family. Interesting. It's kind of a risky maneuver. But it sounds like you can only add people, or I'm sorry, remove. If you've removed them, you can't replace them for like a year or something like that. Like they've put a very long. Like you can't just rotate your family in. You'd have to think really hard about who you're going to have, right?
Yeah.
Bobby Blackwolf says, my wife likes this idea because she wants access to my Jackbox games on her laptop, and I own them all on Steam. Yeah, I mean, Alan and I can consolidate our libraries, too. I don't know if he has anything that I, like, really want.
I mean, but here's, know? Like, here once again, like, this is, I like this type of thinking out of the box and stuff because, like, we know that there's another Switch coming down the line here pretty soon. And we know that, you know, mom or dad or whomever is accumulating a large library of games that they don't play. Wouldn't it be nice to, like, just be able to gift your kids a Steam Deck or something like that? And boom, now they have instant access to 800, 900 games, you know, like, without any additional fees or charges and... I mean,
that's a very good point. Steam's been around a while now. Those folks that started Steam accounts in college and built up a library are probably parents of game playing age kids now.
Yeah, I have so many games and so many unredeemed games. Like, it's ridiculous the amount of, like, I was trying to consult. There's no way. Like, I've gone through, like, Humble Bundle. I wish there was a way to, like, mark off redeemed, not redeemed, or whatever. But, like, I had to compile, like, large files of just keys of games and like see cross-reference what I have and stuff. It's insane.
Breakman in chat says, I was laughing at this comment. Breakman says, LOL, dear children, my pile of shame is now your Merry Christmas. Kind of. That's really funny. I like that.
I don't know. I would want like a something that doesn't necessarily merge the libraries. Mm-hmm. You know, but gives you access to it.
Which, that's what the old
kind of like
method did, right? I don't remember. It's been a while.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think this is merging.
I think that that's better.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds to me like it's merging them, and I don't think that's a good idea.
I think if it's similar to the old method, you still see ultimately like whose game it is, like on the Steam page before you launch it. Alan and I used to have a shared library, but it stopped at some point. Like, I don't know what we did. So, yeah.
Nobody gets any of my stuff. I'm keeping it to myself.
Basically, the difference now is before it used to be if someone was playing something from your library, you couldn't play anything from it. So now they're saying, well, as long as it's not the same game you're playing, then it's fine. Which, cool.
Yeah. Interesting. All right, well, let's move on and talk about some talks that happened at GDC, because Game Developers Conference was this weekend. And although there's not a ton of gaming news that usually comes out of Game Developers Conference, there's sometimes some interesting little tidbits. as the industry looks at literally like how the sausage is made. There's a lot of game developers that come together and talk about, you know, what they've done for games, what's worked, what hasn't worked. And sometimes we do get news about, you know, new features for game creators. We'll get into a story about that later. But for this, let's talk about a talk on Super Mario Brothers Wonder. There was some slides that came out that were shared on Twitter talking about Nintendo's Super Mario Wonder team showing off different brainstorming sessions that it had in a talk that they were having. The game's directors Shiro Mori and producer Takashi Tezuka were sharing some insight about what went into the process. So some of the brainstorming sessions had Mario surfing, riding a unicycle, jumping on a pogo stick. I'm kind of surprised that wasn't something they went with. That sounds kind of fun. They also even went as far as to have Wonder Effect testing sessions and unused Wonder Effects. There was even a prototype level that was completely cut with a giant block Mario where enemies were chomping away at his head. Player turns into a giant block Mario and advances while avoiding getting eaten. Anyway, it sounds pretty cool. Could make for a very interesting Mario Maker later on if they ever went that way, but who knows. Anyway, in the talk, previously to the talk, some of the folks behind Super Mario Brothers Wonder have mentioned how they prototyped all sorts of things. They had over 2,000 ideas that went into this game, and just some of the best ones were actually, of course, the ones that made it into the game. There was a Yoshi egg throwing mechanic that you saw in prior games. Also, apparently Miyamoto was not a big fan of the early elephant designs. And so that was refined a little bit. So, interesting. I mean, those are sorts of the, like what was left on the cutting room floor sorts of things that you hear on, GDC talks, and it's fascinating stuff, but not usually the type of stuff that makes news headlines. But I hope everybody that went to GDC had a really good time. I thought there was a lot of very interesting things going on at GDC. Apparently, at some point, there was a gathering of folks from the industry to let out a cathartic scream in front of GDC, just to reflect on the state of the gaming industry, layoffs, etc. And everybody just fucking screamed for a minute. And I'm sure the police were called. But it's those types of interesting events, that probably made for a unique GDC this year. So. All right. Anyhow, moving on. Darksakura.
Well, kind of hinted at putting chips in your brain earlier, but it's kind of something I've been following is the whole Neuralink thing, where basically it's for people who've lost a complete use of their limbs, full paraplegic. So that they can find ways of communicating with people through digital means. And the first patient that had the chip installed, named Nolan Arbal, has been able to do some cool things like playing video games. So one of the first thing, and by the way, I should also say that he's only had a few issues with it, but no cognitive impairments. But going back to this, he did a live stream with Neuralink, talking about playing chess and also playing, Rob, you'll like this, Civ 6.
Yeah, I heard about this. Yeah, I mean, I'm
playing
just
for 8 hours.
Sorry, just full disclosure. When I see Neuralink, I immediately roll my eyes because I know that it's a Elon Musk back thing, and I just don't fucking like him, and I don't intended to support anything that has his name attached to it. However, I will admit it's a little torn because I do like hearing about, oh, there's these things that allow, you know, more accessibility to certain people and allow, you know, people to, you know, experience things they have not been able to so far. So I'm a little torn. My hope is that, you know, similar to the Tesla experience, one company will do it and then other companies will come in and do it even better. That's my hope.
I had intended not to bring up the ownership at all.
So sorry. Well, I'm thinking about it. Others are thinking about it.
Well, I mean, I'll save that for another thing. But anyway, though, the fact that something like this is in existence and someone made it and someone is living a better life because of it, I think that's awesome. And the fact that they're using it to play video games is honestly even more awesome. Mm-hmm. The way that the chip works, it has like these different threadish like electrodes that go into parts of the brain that control movement, and so it helps with responding on a computer, being able to control like house automation, being able to use a keyboard. I think having bionic people now, or I guess kind of cybernetic people, is going to change a lot of lives in the future. We need to continue developing technology like this. Mm-hmm. I was also reading that they now have a bionic hand that can transmit actual sensation of feeling, if not like legit touch. Mm. So that's pretty cool. But still, you know, it just goes to show that people, you know, no matter their ability level, are going to want to play something, and you open up that world to them, it gives them some joy. And we need to remember that people going through various disabilities are people, and they want to be happy and enjoy things just like the rest of us do.
Mm-hmm. And Civ 6 is an excellent place to use those abilities, that's for sure.
I'd imagine it would make things a lot easier. That would be the kind of game that would lend itself best to something like that.
Oh, yeah. And reading this comment from Questbuster, if you don't care for Neuralink, other companies have been exploring BCI, brain-computer interfaces, for years, such as one in Australia where one of their patients used their approach to tweet in 2021. He has since been doing more with it since then. So, yeah, that's my whole thing is I'm like, okay, like I'm not going to hate on this because it's making, you know, again, things more accessible, you know, and what Jamie explained there is generally a good thing. I just don't intend to support this particular company, but I look at this as an industry of this is where, you know, other companies are going to go as well. So anyway. All right. Let's move on and talk about, unfortunately, one company that is going to no longer be able to do their thing. Loki.
Yes. Well, the Pokemon Company or Nintendo is coming after a bunch of different fan-made things now. So the first to be hit is Relic Castle, which is a popular form of, based off of the creation and sharing of Pokemon fan games, and it has been taken down without warning. There is a post on Twitter put out by Relic Castle saying, "Dear Pokemon fan community, it is with heavy heart that I have to announce that Relic Castle website has been taken down following a DMCA takedown notice." And then apparently they're going to still have their Discord available for people as of right now. Also, weirdly enough, the Pokemon Company has requested a takedown of a 7-year-old video featuring a modded Call of Duty Zombies match where they've replaced the zombies with Pikachu. They've requested that be taken down as well.
Well, I think back to the story about the lawyer last week that worked there and said basically he gets called attention to things when it comes across his desk. And I get that the 7 years old thing makes for a great headline, but I just think, well, somebody finally shared it with him. Somebody finally told him about it, and that's how they ended up seeing it. But what's the fucking point? Like, I agree, and I also would kind of go, isn't there like kind of parody that could go into that as well? That, you know, right. I don't think they exactly have the right to be doing that. But again, when a large company threatens you, what are you going to do? And YouTube is not often sided with the creators, unfortunately. We talked about mm-hmm. that before. So, but man, having this whole website, you know, closed. But the thing is this going to stop a single person from buying a Pokemon game? No, look, no. This community is still saying they're going to continue on Discord. They're going to continue supporting all this stuff. So does this actually change anything?
I mean, it just makes it a little harder to find, I guess. They would have to like join the Discord or something like that, but that's not impossible.
Yeah.
And
well, I also meant, does it change anything from either perspective? You know, does
no.
it? Yeah. Is it going to stop
basically
the Pokemon? People are going to look at it and go, wow, what a bunch of dicks. But is it really going to change anything?
Huh. Right. It's not because all the games weren't actually hosted on this site. They were linked out to other sites where they're hosted. So they're like, yeah, just use the Wayback Machine. And it's like the site never went anywhere. It's like, oh, bravo. Good job. You didn't do anything.
I will say this much, though. This is my way of putting it succinctly. Stories like these, where the legal team is just shutting these things down for apparently no reason, and until they explain themselves, which they're never going to do, it's apparently for no reason. This is why a lot of people out there were excited to play PAL World as something that it completely wasn't even a game. People were willing to believe PAL World was something that it wasn't because everybody secretly wants these fucking legal teams and stuff to get theirs.
Well, I think they also maybe want like innovation, or they want something different with the Pokemon games, because that's why they're playing these fan games. It's not that they dislike Pokemon. It's just like they dislike, or maybe they want more of the Pokemon games that they're making, or maybe they don't like the direction that they're taking those Pokemon games, and so they're
like, I don't think you can say that the Pokemon games don't innovate, because Pokemon Go is probably one of the most innovative video games of all time.
Yeah, but how old is that now? Like, come on.
But I'm saying, like, Pokemon puts out a bunch of different products, but I think what you really mean is, from a technical perspective, the Nintendo commitment platform holds them back. That's what it is. You don't get Pikachu in 4K because of the platforms that they're continuing to release on.
I mean, but I don't know.
Anyway. All right. Well, if Pokemon isn't your thing, maybe Fortnite is kind of your thing. And as you know, Fortnite has been through a lot of changes in the last few months. Or I should say that there's new modes in it that make you realize that Fortnite is much more than Battle Royale, which is the game that everyone calls Fortnite. And that includes things like Lego Fortnite, which is, you know, a lot of people have been saying it's Minecraft, but it's also kind of a survival sort of game. I get not quite as much Minecraft vibes as I do Dungeon Quest or Dragon Quest Builders. Do you remember that? That's what Lego Fortnite feels like to me, is Dragon Quest Builders and that kind of like genre of games. But I do like Lego Fortnite. And of course, a lot of people like Lego Fortnite because it's still very popular. And now this game mode is going to be expanding, and this was something that was announced at GDC. So we don't often get a lot of gaming news, but because this is about creating worlds and creating experiences in Fortnite, it fit the bill of something to promote at GDC. So during Epic Unreal's keynote on March 20th, they were talking about Fortnite and Unreal, and talked about how both were going to be evolving in the future. And Epic is going to be adding tools and features to let anyone create their own big or small Lego adventures and share them online in Fortnite on all of the platforms that Fortnite is on, which is pretty much everything. That's going to be starting on Tuesday. Lego tools, templates, assets, they're in Fortnite's creative mode, and Unreal Editor for Fortnite, or UEFN, which is the more advanced software to create these things in. Logo designed islands will follow all the same rules as other user generated content, but there are some additional rules and restrictions because Lego is mandating all published Lego islands must have an ESRB rating of E10 plus or lower, because it's got to be kid friendly. The Lego group is also going to take a cut of money that you make through this. So you agree to share 15% of your total island payout with the Lego group. So there's something to consider there. But I'm sure there's folks that, you know, will go do their thing. And I believe Lego kind of announced as like a proof of concept sort of thing of this, there's a new cat island, Lego cat island that's available, that's like a different level where you go in and you play with cats. And as somebody who likes Legos and likes cats, yes, this speaks to me. I would like to try this mode. I imagine Loki has got to be sitting there going, I might have to try that if I can put Minecraft down for a minute. So it's, yeah, I'll have to check that out this week at some point. But yeah, it's continuing to expand. So very, very interesting. And again, I've talked about this before. I won't repeat myself too much, but Fortnite is not a game. Fortnite is now a platform. And it's very interesting to see this stuff continue to expand. We'll see.
And it's funny because, like, you know, Roblox It's, I think that started off as like a Lego game, Lego-inspired game.
Ish, yeah.
And now it's basically, it's like Lego-type characters making, you know, obstacle courses and stuff. And then sure enough, this video that they're talking about, hey, start building your own Lego islands. The first thing that, hey, you can make obstacle courses. Or, hey, we like to be cool like the kids, but we're going to call them obbies. You can make obbies. We speak in the language, kids. you want to come play over here with us fellow kids, you know? Like, so, yeah, I mean, certainly it looks cool. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
Very least, you can get some more Lego things.
All right. Well, from the newest to some older games and new discoveries, Dark Sakura.
Well, do you recall? Well, did you ever play a lot of the Shinobi games, especially that came out later, like on Saturn?
Only the old school arcade games. I never played the Saturn ones, to be honest.
Well, Shinobi Legions, also known in Japan as Shin Shinobi Den. And in Europe as Shinobi X, because everything had an X in the name. Well, there is a cheat code in Shinobi Legions discovered by Bo Bales, the Saturn hacker, that has a debug mode. It activates debug. But it's going to require 40 buttons to make this happen. So the steps to do it require, get ready, go to the options screen, navigate to music, select stage 2-3, navigate to sound effect and select 6. Sorry, 0-6. Navigate to audio and hold L while putting in this 40-button sequence. A button 10 times, X once, B 3, Y once, C 6, Z once, or Z once. X 10 times, A once, Y 3 times, B once, Z 6 times, C once, exit the option screen and start a new game. And if you did it correctly, you can press the R button to bring up a menu with level select to change your lives and continues, boost your life bar, all kinds of stuff. You'll be able to hold LR and Z to move the protagonist freely without collision. So yeah, it will, there's a patch out there too that if you, like select a button, it'll just automatically activate the debug mode. So there you go. But yeah, it's there. Now we know how to do it for real without any external stuff, but apparently someone made it easy.
All right. I was trying to see if Kotaku had written a guide yet on how to unlock the debug mode in Shinobi Legions. They don't have one yet. Kotaku, this is not how you're gonna win. Just saying.
Why aren't you on top of the Shin Shinobi Den stuff, huh?
Anyway, but still, in all seriousness, always love these stories about discovering like old things, new things in old games, is really cool. Especially the one, what was the one a few weeks ago where it was like you could completely like put the PlayStation into like debug mode and flip the disc out and all this stuff was buried in like an old Alien game that was on PlayStation. Yeah. That was so cool. So yeah, I like that a lot of this stuff kind of gets found. Of course, a lot of this is from, I think some people like go so far as to like decompile the games and find this stuff. But yeah, it's interesting. Interesting.
I was actually watching someone today. I'll have to find the video again where he had to completely reverse engineer a code key thing for a game that no longer had the box that isn't being supported anymore. So there's no way to get a new code to play the game. And he created some script that lets you go into how the authenticator on it works and the numbers that it checks for and what you have in order to make it work. And it was pretty amazing. I mean, a little bit was over my head. I was a little better at following now that I'm starting some coding, but it was kind of neat what people are doing so they can play their old games again too.
All right. Well, let's move on a few more stories before we get to another classic game in our regular segment. But first, we're going to go over to Loki.
Well, this is not great, but apparently Bloomberg is saying that Sony has paused production on the PlayStation VR 2 because it's produced 2 million units and is having trouble selling them. Sales are declining each quarter, according to the International Data Corporation. And, you know, I think, you know, obviously it's because it's expensive, and it also requires you to buy a PlayStation 5, which is also expensive. And so you don't have the must-have games on PlayStation VR. And so why make the over $1,000 investment to play some games in VR? Hopefully, though, they're going to be supporting PC very soon, because I did see there is an article talking about how Sony has enabled NVIDIA support for the PlayStation VR 2 using the DP Auxiliary Emulator and a modified EDID. I don't know what the hell that means, but it sounds like that they're working on getting PC support to work. Someone.
Which is legit a great idea that could save this hardware, is getting it to run with PCs as well. Because unfortunately, the must-have utility doesn't exist on PlayStation. And it seems very clear it's not coming. So that's, you know, I'm surprised it took this long for this story to come, kind of come down the pipeline where they're having to scale back how much they're making this, because there's not a lot of reason to buy one currently. You know what I mean? Like, you're either buying one to play stuff they already announced some time ago and released, so maybe, but otherwise, you know, what's Sony doing now for this device? It's starting to feel like yet another Sony abandoned piece of hardware. By the way, happy birthday to the PSP, which was released 19 years ago.
It's a hard sell, just because, like, I like the PlayStation VR, or like, at least I like playing the games on it, but yeah, it's hard making that sell now for these games, considering that there's not really that many exclusives. And then the ones that are, like, playable on multiple platforms, you can play that on a cheaper device. It's just, and I don't know if it could be that night and day different as far as quality goes. Like, am I going to get a better gameplay experience on the PlayStation VR 2? I don't know if that's the case, but yeah, it's a tough sell right now.
And it also sucks that it doesn't play original PlayStation VR games, which kind of hobbled this thing from the start. And I understand, before y'all correct me and explain it to me, I understand why it doesn't play the original, because of the complete change in the way that it senses the environment around you and all that. But that just goes to show the original decision wasn't very future-proofed. It just kind of sucks that, you know, the original library isn't playable, which, again, even the great software that's out there for original PlayStation VR doesn't really work with VR 2 unless the developers, like, you know, which they did with No Man's Sky and a few other games, actually upgraded it. And Bobby in chat says, I love the PSVR 2 hardware. It just has no software. Yeah, that's it. Like, and I remember going to your house and checking out PSVR 2, which, if I'm not mistaken, on your show tonight said was probably the last time you actually used that thing. Maybe one time since. But in all seriousness, yeah, I enjoyed the I keep calling it a demo. I didn't even think it was like a full game. The Horizon demo, the old proof of concept thing that we were playing, I thought it was neat. But yeah, it was no like must have killer thing for VR. And like Beat Saber's kind of lived its life at this point. You know, what's next? Show us that compelling future for VR in gaming. Half-Life Alyx, but Half-Life Alyx is kind of limited to one thing. So, and I don't think, yeah. So it's just, I don't know. But yeah, S. Joan Hunter Matt says, then need that PC update to help supplement them until they get those PSVR 2 games out. And Bobby says, I do believe that if I could use my PSVR 2 on my PC, the games would look better than they do on my Valve Index. And the PSVR 2 is technically cheaper than a Valve Index. Excellent point.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah, it really would. So that does seem to be kind of the hardware saving direction for this product. So it might even make me interested in one, to be quite honest, because the fact that I could have something that could play PC stuff and work on PlayStation is actually kind of like, ooh, okay, now we're talking, right? So we'll see what happens. Anyway, in the meantime, let's move on and talk about Street Fighter VI. Not a game I believe is played in VR at all. But Street Fighter VI is still going. You know, it's been out for a little bit. But we are now talking about rumors and leaks for Season 2 DLC. Apparently, the leaker who accurately leaked the entire Street Fighter VI roster before it was revealed. Remember when that was a big issue? Capcom not happy about that. But they still, and the person was right. Well, this is what they're saying to expect with the six DLC characters for Season 2. M. Bison will be the first character, which makes sense because he's not in the game yet. And he was pretty much the main antagonist of Street Fighter 2, the most infamous one of all time. So, and Bison, also included would be Vega, also from the, bosses of that series. Some other characters, maybe not from Street Fighter 2, but some people will still be happy to hear about, are Mika, or Rainbow Mika, who is a pro wrestler in Street Fighter Alpha 3, and then got a redesign in Street Fighter 5, also rumored to be a part of this pack. And then, also, we have Sakura, which I'm sure we'll make.
Yay.
Our very own Dark Sakura happy. And of course, Sakura, of course, debuted in Street Fighter 2 Alpha. And Elena also for this pack, which she was.
Oh, Elena's fun.
Yeah, she was from Street Fighter 3. You were not already.
She's
aware.
The leggy girl.
Yes. And the sixth character is supposed to be a brand new character. There is no name provided as of yet. So just that the sixth character is not going to be one that you actually know. Somebody that's going to be brand new. So. There you go. Bobby Blackwolf says, the day that M. Bison graced the new Street Fighter was the greatest day of your life. But for him, it was a Tuesday. Throwback to the movie. Anyone?
I was also seeing something about that where they're growing Sakura's hair out, which would be interesting. Mm. It might end up being something like her Alpha 2 ending, maybe.
All right. Well, while we're talking about old games, I think it's a great time to segue into our next segment. So here we go.
And now it's time to travel back to a simpler time, where I'll dive into the vault and pull out a classic and tell you about it. It's time for the classic game of the week.
And Darksakura, what did you pick for us this week?
I picked a game called The Dungeon Revealed. And any old Mac gamer should know this one. So it was a dungeon crawl game that was created by John Raymond and published by Woodrose Editions in 1987. It is the enhanced commercial release of another game that Raymond played called The Dungeon of Doom. That came out of Shareware in 1985. And there's some more about this. The games were released for Mac OS and were compatible all the way up to System 7. So I believe that the video that us here live are watching is a System 6 version. So at any rate, you have a character that is trapped in a dungeon underground. And if you attempt to take stairs from the dungeon, you get a message that says a force prevents you from escaping to the surface. Maybe the orb will set you free. And so it's kind of vague, isn't it? So at any rate, you have 40 floors and each of them have a staircase going up and a staircase going down. The floor plan is randomly generated, and through each of those levels, it gets to be more and more complicated to navigate through it, very maze-like. You also can find some armor and magic accoutrements, potions, wands, weapons, all kinds of stuff that you find through the dungeon's little areas that you're searching through. You also have monsters, depending on their circumstances. They can also be more aggro or less aggro. And you have to eat so that you don't starve to death. And of course, as you go further and further, the monsters become stronger and stronger. So you have, when you start your game, you can pick one of seven classes. You might laugh as much as I did at the last one. I even laughed when it was new. Knight, fighter, sage, wizard, alchemist, jeweler, and Jones. You can be a Jones. everyone has their own attributes, very D&D like in how they're assigned. As far as each of these other ones, they all have like this ability to access one type of object. Like an alchemist can identify potions so they can, avoid the poison. Wizards can have wands, stuff like that. The Jones, I'm trying to see if I can find what it was the Jones did. I think that they're just the standard, but it's been a moment. I'll have to look them up. But at any rate, each class has a different kind of likelihood to find a certain kind of item, and you improve your ability scores as you go along, very D&D-like. But as far as the original game, Dungeon of Doom, Don't Shoot Food Orange, right? It was basically John Raymond's made the game to teach himself C, and because he did not like the Mac port of Ultima 2. Like, I don't like this game. I'm going to make my own. Bye. And he released it anyway as shareware in 1985, but had no payments really by 1987, even though it had become one of the most popular games on the Mac at the time. So he said, well, screw that, and upgraded the game and decided to have it published by Woodrose Editions in 87 and retitled it The Dungeon Revealed. The gameplay was pretty much the same, but the enhancements had some new sounds, hidden vaults, gatekeepers at the stairs, new items, and then he also put the source code out there that could be purchased by registered buyers. And he also did a final version of the Dungeon of Doom that basically changed none of the code since version 4 was out, but reclassified this as a free demo for the Dungeon Revealed. Macworld had inducted Dungeon of Doom into the 1987 Macworld Game Hall of Fame in the role-play game category. The runner-up to this was the Seven Cities of Gold. And they also named Dungeon of Doom as the best implementation of Rogue in 2D maze game in its Shareware and Public Domain Game Awards the same year. Mac user rated the game a 4 out of 5, calling it a standard adventure in the Ultima series genre. And there you go. I mean, it's black and white. You're going along these little tiles. It kind of looks like it's scrolling a little bit. But, this is what our games were like on the Mac back then.
I was going to say, it's very old school Mac.
But this game, even though I didn't have a Mac as a kid or, in the 80s, we had one at school. And I remember people sneaking this game onto that computer, And, my friends playing this game, my friends who had more money than me. I didn't remember when I saw the Jones thing listed again, I was like, oh, I kind of remember that, but I still don't remember what they do. And it wasn't listed here. And just like, I get to be a Jones.
Questbuster.
Granddaddy was a Jones.
Questbuster comments on this game saying it's simple fun that still holds up, especially if you're something of a roguelike fan. Yeah, definitely big rogue vibes off this game. My friend had I didn't have a Mac. My friend had a Mac, but I remember the game Crystal something. It was a huge game, and it was more of an action-y game that you move. They remade it on Xbox 360. I don't remember the name of it. Somebody's going to know it. And you move the little spaceship around collecting things, but you want to avoid the mines. It was very much like a test your mouse kind of game, and they have
Crystal
to get
up. Quest?
Was it Crystal Quest? I guess maybe, yeah. Crystal Quest actually sounds right. Yeah.
Was it Crystal Quest?
Yeah, it was Crystal something. I know that. Not Crystal Maze. That came out on the show. But yeah, Crystal
it came
Quest.
Out on the Apple IIe before. I mean, there's been the Game Boy version too.
Oh, wow. Anyways, I just remember the Mac one, to be honest. So, all right. Well, anyway, there it is, your classic game of the week. The Dungeon Revealed.
Maybe Crystal Quest will get its time in the future.
Yeah, we'll see. All right. We still have some headlines to get to, so let's do some rapid fire news, and we'll start with Loki.
Spokesperson for Larian Studios has said that, hey, we're done with Baldur's Gate 3. We're not developing any more for it, and we're moving on from Baldur's Gate and Dungeons & Dragons. So they're going to be working on a new IP. We don't know what it is, but it's not going to be Baldur's Gate.
Honestly, good for them being able to make a power move like that at this point. So many studios kind of get stuck into doing sequel upon sequel. And, you know, Baldur's Gate 3 is one of the most award-winningest games there's been in quite some time. And I love that they can just be like, you know what? We want to go do something new.
I mean, fair enough. They should. Yeah. And then we have the release date now for the Final Fantasy 14's final DLC. Or is it 16?
16.
16, my mistake. 16th final DLC. That is going to be Rising Tide. It's going to unravel the mystery behind the icon of water, which I think we kind of figured was coming anyways.
Yes.
And then, let's see, that's going to be coming out on April 18th. It's going to cost $20, or you can buy an expansion pass for $25.
I will just quickly mention, since you brought up Final Fantasy 14, they released a lot of info on that at PAX East this weekend. And Dawn Trail has a date. It's going to be playable on June 28th if you pre-order it, which most fans of the game are going to do that. So I don't know why they bother to have two release dates, but June 28th will be the date for most people. It looks to be very heavily Final Fantasy IX inspired based on the pre-order bonuses and those sorts of things. So we're not quite sure how yet. But then also related to this, Loki, the Final Fantasy 16 Cross 14 event. So the 16 event in 14, yes, that's the thing, is going to be, it looks like next month. So in April, that'll be fun. All
right. So what's up with the whole like double currency thing with the Xbox version?
Oh,
that you have to buy like a special current coin in order to pay for your services, which is stupid.
Okay, it's weird. So the Xbox version officially released this week. And so the only way you can pay for your subscription on Xbox, if you only have an Xbox license, is to use these Xbox coins that you buy through the store, which is essentially, you know, Microsoft getting a cut of that one way or another. So I'm not sure the why behind it, because it definitely kind of looks silly when it's put side by side with the PS4 and 5 version and the PC version, why you have this. But, you know, it's going to enable some people to play the game that haven't been able to before. An interesting point I saw raised elsewhere is that in some territories, certain ones in like South America, Central America, this will make Final Fantasy 14 more affordable than it is today. But meanwhile, most people in the US, Europe, etc., are kind of razzing the team because you have to have a Xbox Game Pass account, right? Or whatever they call gold now. It's like a Game Pass Lite. You have to have what used to be Xbox Gold, and you have to have this monthly sub, which seems very silly. So my other advice would be they're giving away the starter edition on Game Pass. Once you play the starter edition, you have, I think, a 30-day free sub, but you have to start paying a sub. Don't go to that edition. Use the free edition to see if you like the game. And then if you decide you like the game and you want the restrictions removed, then go to the starter edition, because otherwise you're missing out on being able to play a good chunk of the game for free. So, yeah, I think this is a really silly, and a lot of people are like, what the hell are they doing with Final Fantasy on Xbox? I think it's a little ridiculous, but if it gets even a handful of new people into the game, then cool, I guess. But was it worth the effort? I don't know, but I can't imagine it was much. I mean, the game already runs on PCs very well, and, you know, like when you put an Xbox controller in the PC, it has all the Xbox labelings anyway. So.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know. Whatever. Anyway, sorry. A little diversion there, but I noticed it was nowhere else in the show roll. I thought I'd bring it up. Dark Sakura.
Well, a game that I certainly love is going to be coming out for PS5, PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC on May 9th. It's Rainbow Cotton, which is the, I would say, the successor to Panorama Cotton, the rare one for the Mega Drive / Genesis. This is a remake of the one that came out for Dreamcast, which was released on January 20th, 2000 in Japan. Never got an American release. So it is, you can play the original Dreamcast version or you can play an enhanced version. It will have a rumble and speaker support for your controllers. Cotton will be, of course, in full glorious 3D. Also have a little sibling mode where you can play as Cotton and Silk together. Silk usually floats around with her. It's a little fairy friend. You can actually play as Silk. And then not only can you listen to the original Japanese with subtitles, they're all going to, I think, stay that, but they will also have subtitles in English, French, Spanish, Italian, and German. So, it is basically an overall, it's a complete remaster. Everything's going to be pretty. It has all the stuff in it. And they also, though, have, like I said, you can play the original one, and that one is emulated to be exactly like it was. So,
all right.
I love this game. We imported this the moment I heard it was coming out because it was the only way I could get something like Panorama Cotton at the time.
Yeah.
And it's adorable. Like, I love the bonus rounds are still the same as they were in the other Cotton games where you have to collect tea, teacups. Mm-hmm. And she goes, "Wee-lo!" And, you know, subjugates fairies to do her bidding. Who doesn't like to subjugate a fairy to do their bidding?
All right. Sounds like a fun Friday night. All right. Anyway, let's talk about a follow-up to something from last week's show. We were joking about Team 0% and their journey on Super Mario Maker. They may have to call themselves Team 0.001% because there's this one level they weren't able to beat. Well, guess what? Did they beat the level this week? No. But they're claiming victory anyway. Because of a technicality, here's the thing. The one level that they were still unable to beat called Trimming the Herbs, you might remember that was the level they were trying to beat after time and time and time again. It was revealed this week that the creator had cheated and was able to upload the game to the server even though they hadn't actually beaten the level themselves. So the level was confirmed to be a fake. The level's creator owned up, Ahoyo was the level's creator's name, owned up to the fact that it was an illegitimate level and somehow was still able to be uploaded to the servers. And they basically talk about that it was tool assisted, or I don't know how they did it. They cheated to get the level on the server. That's that. But so this thing has been sitting on the server since 2017. So no idea why it wasn't flagged sooner. But yeah. So now, because it has been officially unveiled that this level was a fraud, Team 0% says that their rules are clearly that they are not going to play levels or count levels that are illegitimate, but somehow made it to the servers. Therefore, they have already beaten every level in the game with the completion of a prior level a few weeks ago. So, which, you know what?
I mean,
to be fair, yes. If you cheat in an online video game, your contributions are invalid. I agree with that.
100%. I feel that they should have still beaten it. Yeah. I mean, but they should have beat it with a task.
With a task.
So,
yeah.
So just like, you know, just fight fire with fire.
Yeah. Well, I understand. They can let somebody else do that. I can understand why Team 0% wants to maybe, you know, keep the integrity and not use those types of tools and so forth. I get it. But yeah, essentially, if you cheat online in a video game, your contributions are invalid. You are not a winner. And I think that's the right call to say this doesn't exist because it's cheated. So the end. And you know what? Props to the original author, at least, for admitting it, Granted, it's 7 years later, but maybe they've done a lot of growing up in 7 years. I know I feel like I have too. So, you know, maybe they saw that this was in the news and they came clean on this. So I'll at least say, hey, glad they did that. So these folks that were working so hard to get the 0% could feel good about the fact that they actually did do it. So. All right. Anyhow, let's travel around the world and check out some release dates and some games that are coming out a little sooner to hopefully replace the hole that Mario Maker Wii U might be leaving in your heart. Loki, let's start with the U.S.
We've got a few things. So starting off on PC, we have Boomeroad. Not a Lot, which is a robot game. And then my favorite of these three games... Doranko Wanko, which is a game where you play as a Pomeranian and you imagine Splatoon, but with a Pomeranian, and you're trying to mess up a house and make it as dirty as possible.
Sounds fun.
I think the Wanko would be like the one, you know, like the bark sound that a dog makes in Japanese.
Possibly, but it looks adorable, and now I have to wish list it because it is on Steam. So those are coming out this week. We've got Bulwark Falconeer Chronicles on PC, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, and Xbox Series. Grandia HD Collection on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. Planet Zoo on PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series. South Park Snow Day on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 5, and Xbox Series. Amiro Chocolate on Nintendo Switch, Mars 2120 on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, and Xbox Series, Open Roads on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, and Xbox Series, Pepper Grinder on PC and Nintendo Switch. It's like Tachia on PC, and that's it.
I'm sorry, I was muted for a minute there, but I'm now obsessed with this trailer for this what is this, Doranko Wanko, where yes we're watching the little dog, and sorry to those that are on the podcast feed, but you can look up the trailer, it's on YouTube, where we're watching this itty bitty cute little Pomeranian dog just fuck up this entire house.
That sounds like a Pomeranian, though.
I kind of need to play this.
This is what Nintendog should have been, to be quite honest.
It makes it's me free think to of play. Cat lateral damage, though.
Yeah. I know cat lateral damage is great, too. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Free to play on Steam.
Very cool. All right. Let's see. How about we travel to Japan real quick and check out the releases there. So in Japan, on the 26th, South Park Snow Day. Yes, it's getting a Japanese release as well. That is coming out on the Nintendo Switch. Also on the Nintendo Switch, on the 28th, Radirigi 2. We have a regular and a limited edition for that. Preminstar is coming out as well in a regular and a limited edition. Winning Post 10 2024. You can never have enough Winning Post games. That is coming out in a regular and limited edition. Amiro Chocolate is also out in Japan this week. And let's see. Muv Love also gets a 20th Odyssey limited edition multi-language box. I'm almost positive this game has come out before, so I'm thinking this is some type of box. Oh yeah, it's Muv Love and Muv Love Alternative. So it's a couple games all in one. We also have Aquarium coming out in Japan on the 28th. And let's look at the PlayStation 5 real quick and see what releases are there. As expected, the South Park Snow Day is out in Japan as well on the PlayStation 5. Radirigi 2 is out there, as well as Winning Post 10 2024. And that's it. Everything else I mentioned is only for Switch. Dark Sakura, how about the UK?
It's a handful of things. On the 26th for the main four, we have South Park Snow Day. On the 28th, we have on Switch, we have World War Z or World War Z. Also on the 28th for Switch, Outward Definitive Edition. And then on PlayStation and Switch on the 29th, we have Pocket Bravery.
All right.
That's it.
We have a few more news stories for you, and then we'll see if you all have any questions for us, as if we haven't taken enough tangents tonight. But what's the problem with a few more? So we'll go over to Loki with another headline.
Yeah, apparently, well, it's, I think it's been reported anonymously because they haven't said it yet from Rockstar Games. But allegedly there is rumors that Grand Theft Auto 6 is going to be delayed into 2026. And the reason for that is that they're behind schedule in as far as development goes. And that is, they're claiming, due to the lack of people returning to office. I don't believe that, but whatever. So, you know, right now employees are worried that they're going to have to get back into a crunch type of style of development, as is typical with these types of games. But, you know, hopefully, they said internally it's pushing it back to late 2025 or 2026 may be a possibility. So I guess we'll have to wait and see what happens.
Their reason,
I'm fine with waiting.
The reason is very silly. Yeah, at the, you know, here we go. Cue the quote. The bad game is bad. The good game's good forever. Blah, 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 blah. You know, you all know the drill. If the delay is what needs to happen to keep the workers happy and healthy, this game is still going to sell billions of copies when it comes out. Okay, maybe not that many, but still, it's going to break records
but
and
it,
shit when it comes
it's
out.
It's not about keeping the employees happy. It's about keeping the shareholders happy. And so we'll have to see what the shareholders want, because they know best.
The shareholders better be watching what else happens in the industry with rushed games if they want to learn to fuck or mismanaged games, because there's many of them out there you can draw from. So, like, I would highly encourage, because I'm sure this game is going to be chock full of ways to nickel and dime the audience with whatever they've got planned for Grand Theft 6 Online.
It's going to be bad.
Don't fuck it up, or you're going to lose everything. Don't fuck it up. All right. Last headline tonight is a bit of sad news. Dark Sakura.
Yeah, so the main character designer for all of the Tales games has died. Inomata Mutsumi, who did all the artwork, the character designs for those games. It was on Sunday, March 10th, age 63. And it was apparently very sudden. There were sketches that were left behind. Aww. It was just really, really, very quick and tragic for the family. And my heart goes out to the family.
Yeah. What a legendary gaming series as well. This is very, very sad news indeed to hear. So
yeah,
RIP for sure. All right. And that's a very young age. I know it doesn't seem young, but it's young. So, it's very sad to hear that was sudden. All right. Well, hopefully on a happier note, we're going to get to your calls and questions and so forth in our listener roundtable. If you would like to give us a call, you sure can on our Discord server over at vognetwork.com/discord. We usually take a moment to check in with any emails over at participate@orangelaunchradio.com. I don't think we had any, but let me just double check.
Not a one.
Okay. So if you want to send us an email for a future week, participate@orangelaunchradio.com is the place to do it. I guess once in a while I should actually check Twitter to see if we're getting tweeted anything, but I don't know. Usually it's just spam when I go in there, so we'll see. There was something in there, but it's, I'll have to respond to that. See, this is what I get for not checking Twitter enough. So, that's it, I guess. So I'm going to open it up to Discord over at vognetwork.com/discord if you'd like to give us a call. Otherwise, Loki, do we happen to have any last minute stories?
Not really. I mean, Stardew Valley got a major update recently to 1.6.
I've been hearing about
added
that.
A bunch of stuff. I don't know. I don't follow. I haven't played Stardew Valley in a long time, but it sounds cool. That's all I got.
All right. Let's see.
Tried looking for a few different things, but I didn't really find too much myself.
Yeah, that's all right. I felt like there was still like mainly some bigger things going on this week, especially considering the last couple weeks. But it was also GDC happened this week, so you know. Even though we don't usually get a ton of news out of that, usually when the industry gets together, there's some interesting things that happen. So we did have a couple headlines out of that. So, all right. Well, then with that, I won't draw it out any longer than it needs to be. We'll go ahead and wrap it up for the night. But we look forward to seeing everybody else back here next week for episode number 998 as we inch closer and closer to 1,000 weekly episodes. Thank you again. I really can't stress that enough for being a part of it. If you enjoyed what you heard here at Orange Lounge Radio tonight, please tell a friend or two. Help us spread the word because we are the show where every gamer has a voice, but we need more voices to put out on air. So a nice 5-star review on a site like iTunes or Spotify or wherever it is you found this podcast goes an awful long way. So we really appreciate it. Let's go around and get final thoughts at this point. Dark Soccer, your final thought tonight.
Words. Oh, and I'm going to be old after OLR is old.
Yeah, April's a big month, isn't it?
Yep.
All right. Well, have a good stream tonight.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Okay. Yeah, I will. I look forward to seeing everybody, and I have some things to talk about. So,
fun.
Yeah.
All right.
Bye.
Loki, we'll then go to you. You have your final thought for tonight.
I'm busy. Hopefully, I'm hoping to finish up that first ride this week. Hoping.
Good times. My final thought for tonight is I took the shrink wrap off my Final Fantasy VII Rebirth finally, so I think the streams are going to start this week after me waiting for a little bit so that people that are very, very spoiler averse kind of have enough time to get through or at least get a lot further in the game than I'll be when I start streaming it this week. So please look forward to that. I'm excited to jump in and play because I've heard a lot of good things about it, and I've heard it is very easy to get distracted for a very long time, so we'll see how that goes. But anyway, thank you again, of course, for listening to our show and being here and supporting it, whether it was on the podcast feed or live. We really appreciate you, and we will be back to do it all again in just 7 days. Bobby Blackwolf has let us know he will not be here next week live, so we'll be starting right at 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock. Do not be alarmed if you don't see Bobby next week for the folks that are here live. It's just going to go right into our show at the normal time. So we'll see you then. In the meantime, have a great week, everybody. Bye.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for our live show, tune in to VogNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio nor VogNetwork, but you know they were all still true.